On Monday, we read from your emails. Last week, we spoke with Madhusri Mukherjee about the effects of the tsunami on the tribal peoples of the Andaman and Nicobar Islands in the Indian Ocean. Time, unfortunately, forced us to cut that conversation a bit short, so we've invited her back. And again, thank you very much for joining us today.
Thanks. I'm glad to be here.
Can you tell us, has there been any update on the effects of the tsunami on the islanders and on relief efforts?
Well, as I was saying the last time I talked, relief got to the Nicobars very late, partly because of the logistical problems and partly because local administration seems to have collapsed. Since then, it's been 2 weeks now, relief is getting to the Nicobars. It's mostly being delivered by the Indian Armed Forces. I just want to explain that the entire Nicobar Islands are a tribal reserve, which means that under Indian law, no outsiders are supposed to settle there unless they are deputed by the government. And it, the Nicobars actually had some 10,000 settlers, many of whom were illegal. And these were people from mainland India. And now the complaints that the Nicobaris are making is that aid reached late. But also when it reached, it first reached the settler population, who are more aggressive in demanding that their needs be met. The Nicobaris are a very shy, quiet people, and they, you can see from some of the early TV footage, the settlers were shouting and demanding explanations, whereas the Nicobaris were just standing in the background and weeping. So aid reached the loud people first, which I suppose is understandable. But the Nicobaris observed this, and they felt somewhat alienated. And then what they have said is that not only did the settlers corner the aid, they have been using this as a way to further exploit the Nicobaris by reselling things and so on. And the Nicobaris have submitted a petition to the Indian government asking that the settlers be removed because they cannot live with these people anymore. And the tsunami has actually created a chance for the Indian government to actually rewrite equation on these matters. I think there is a political space now for the Nicobaris to assert themselves in ways that they have never been able to before.
Madhusri Mukherjee, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Madhusri Mukherjee is the author of The Land of the Naked People, Encounters with Stone Age Islanders, and we spoke with her by phone from her family's home in Calcutta, India. Our program on the origins of the modern calendar last week brought in a few questions about the specifics of our current timekeeper, so we've invited Michael Judge to return. He's the author of The Dance of Time, The Origins of the Calendar. Thanks very much for being with us again.
Thank you, sir.
First off, you told us a story about the origins of April Fool's Day involving the shifting of the date of the new year from April 1st to January 1st. We got some emails from people who had heard of other origins.
Yes, indeed, Neil. In fact, there are many, many stories about how April Fool's Day came about. And if I may just for a moment read from my book, it's a very strange day on which practical jokes prevail. These usually take the form of false alarms, but traditionally an April Fool involves sending some poor dupe out on a fruitless or non-existent errand. And the origin of the holiday is very contradictory. There are all sorts of theories about it. Here are a few. That the day's false errands duplicate the fruitless mission of the dove sent out of the ark by Noah. That they imitate Christ's wanderings from Pilate to King Herod and back on the eve of his crucifixion. That the Romans actually began the pranks during their feast of Aprilis, a giddy festival celebrating the first plantings of the season. And it goes on and on and on. And it is obviously connected with the vernal equinox. But nobody really knows where it comes from.
Well, when we talked to you last week, you also said the Julian calendar did not have a leap year. Greg Davis of Baltimore, Maryland, wrote us to say that Julian calendar did indeed have a leap year every 4 years, and the Gregorian calendar simply clarified how the leap year worked.
And I must confess, I misspoke when last we talked. The Julian calendar did indeed have a leap year. The problem was it was 11 minutes too long, the year that they made. And that is the Gregorian reform, to bring that calendar back into the swing of the sun.
The self-correcting Mike Judge. Thanks very much.
Well, we all must be self-correcting sometimes.
Mike Judge is the author of The Dance of Time, The Origins of the Calendar, and he joined us by phone from his office, his home, rather, here in Washington, D.C. You can send your comments, questions, and corrections to totn@npr.org. Please include where you're writing from and help us on how to pronounce your name. Talk of the Nation is produced by Kara Arsenault, Becky Villamas, Megan Moline, Susan Lund, Megan Williams, and J.J. Sutherland. Brendan Banaszak directs the program. Sarah handles the production assistant. Enrica Rivera is our intern. Our technical director is Kevin Waite. He gets engineering help from Vince Muse, Marty Curtius, and Cal Southworth. Today's program was edited by Flo Purnell. The executive producer of Talk of the Nation is Sue Goodwin. In Washington, I'm Neil Conan, NPR News.